Now, once again, here's Mark.
Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here for the next 2 hours. And we, meaning Kurt and Eric from Kurt's Automotive, I-17 in Bell, Alan, my son, and my name is Mark Salem, and both of us are from a repair shop in South Tempe. Nevertheless, now's the time to get in, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to be here for 2 hours, and this is kind of the format of the show. You call us up and tell us what year, make, and model you have, and then talk about the symptoms. We're not real interested in what the guy at Google said. We want to have a give and take. So we ask you, does it do it hot? And you say yes or no, or cold, and left and right, and up and down. And we're really good at settling arguments between husbands and wives. Kurt.
Mark.
You don't like that idea.
I'm not interested in that one.
Okay. I'll help you and your wife.
No, I'll take the responsibility then, you big wussies. I'm perfectly happy in getting the appropriate response and digesting and trying to mediate or arbitrate the complaint between the husband and the wife.
And you've been doing that for like 45 years or something.
I have been. And the success, my grade so far, it comes from Renee. And she's still with me after 47 or whatever.
That's good.
But I did marry when she was 9.
Yeah.
So it's important to know that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Just down the street from you is Action Auto Repair at I-17 in Deer Valley. Full service, family-owned operation, Deer Valley, North Phoenix area since 1983. Tom and I met, I think, in 1968, somewhere around there, during that period of time, and then later in the 70s, because he opened up in 1983, and he was a salesman for the Bear Engine Diagnostic Analysis, and or was he with John Rang back then, selling that other big...
Sun?
No, it wasn't Sun.
There was
the war of the two big engine analyzers.
Yeah.
And John had one, and then Bear had the other, or whatever it was. But anyway, I've known Tom that long, and so have you. I-17 in Deer Valley, Action Auto Repair, is a good guy to try. Okay, this is what happens so many times in my world, is that people call in, and I'm going to throw things that I have in my head right now that have... were last week, okay?
Okay.
And then you guys comment. I've got 140,000 miles on my car, and I just need to get rid of it.
We have cars in the shop with twice that on them.
Okay. All right. But, and so I think what they're saying is I'm scared. That's a lot of miles.
Yeah.
I'm scared. I know the transmission. I don't know about the transmission. I don't know about the air conditioning. I don't know. And there is a difference between what it used to be.
Yes.
When Kurt and I were younger.
100,000 was the mark back then.
If it made it that far.
That's what we were shooting for.
That's exactly right. If that's what we were shooting for.
Yeah.
So when you look at the big picture, you guys help me out. Engines. Life, and give me a brain. Can we say in the last 20 years, engines will last?
Semiconductors. Since computers. Let's go since OBD2, 96 and up.
Okay. So that's the last 25 years.
Yeah.
Right. 2 to 300 is very easy. I mean, a lot of them will start showing early wear around 200, but they'll run another 100 a lot of times on top of that as long as they were well maintained.
And what you're talking about, to clarify for everybody else, is that we start using a little oil, we start leaking a little oil, there's some kind of symptoms that is telling us that the end is somewhere in the next 100 mile, whatever,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
Okay. And so when we get up to but today it's different.
Yeah.
Yeah. 200 or 300.
Yeah.
Easy. But what have you seen? What have you seen in gas motors or diesel motors? What's the top end on the original motor?
That one Mustang that we were driving.
It was like 330, and it was still original engine.
And it was still running good.
We have our Cummins. Was it 490, or is it over 5 now?
The white Cummins we got is right at 550 right now, and it's all original.
A Cummins diesel 5.9.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And that's what people are worried about. I'm with you guys in the sense that it's really nothing to worry about. At 140... the transmission doesn't have much more life to live.
No, the new transmissions, though, with the semiconductors, they kick line pressures up and stuff, so the wear don't happen near as fast as they used to.
Okay.
So I have seen transmissions go over 200,000, but yeah, 150 to 200 is usually where you're going to start having issues.
What's it cost to put a tranny in a car or truck of today, Alan, Eric?
3 to 5?
Yeah, I was going to say 4 to 6, something like that. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. And then what's the sales tax on a new car?
10% of $50,000 is about $5,000, I think.
Okay. That's kind of the comparison I use. I say that a lot. You can go buy a new car, but you can fix what you've got wrong times twice for what the sales tax is.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's non-recoverable dollars, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's lots of... So then I get the people... Now, some people want to buy a new car, and they want an excuse why to buy a new car.
Right.
So it doesn't take more than a couple of give and take before you do that. You just say, okay, well,
yeah,
whatever you want. But I think, finish the sentence, of all the bad engines you see, they died of...
overheat or oil loss.
Yeah. Lack of maintenance.
I was just going to say, the you know, 95% of the failures is customer cost. owner cost.
Yeah,
they blow a hose, and I can make it to the next exit. Or you know, that puddle. I'll, you know, next time I get gas, I'll put oil in it. That's 95% of the stuff is.
Yeah,
it's self inflicted. Is that
yeah.
is that
yes.
fair enough?
Yeah,
the ones that come out on a tow truck that need a motor didn't need a motor before somebody had the radio up too loud or decided to make it, like you said, to go to the next exit.
Yeah, yeah, it's a hot. I can my air conditioning sitting here. You know.
Yeah. I was only a mile from home. Have
yeah.
you ever heard that?
Yeah, I've heard of only 5.
It is that way. It yep. is that way. So I guess the consensus amongst the group is the motor's going to die somewhere between 3, north of 250, 300,000 miles, unless you damage it by running it low on yep. oil or overheating it. Fair
right.
enough. How about diesels? You fill in there.
Well, you know... It's hard to say again, overheater, but yeah, I mean, I have multiple customers over 4 and over 500,000, 600,000.
Okay, and yours has 550 or something?
We got
it?
One with okay. about 550 on it, and we work on a couple Duramaxes. That last one, I think it was over 400,000.
Yeah. Okay, that's the GM diesel,
yeah.
the V8.
So it's not it's not specific to one engine, the Duramaxes, and somebody we both know has got a 6.7 Ford around a 2012. I think they're well over 300,000 on it now.
Okay. So finish this one at a time. Eric, first. Your transmission in your passenger car or light truck will fail somewhere in between da-da.
Passenger cars are easy. 150 to 250. It's just...
Okay.
Depends upon how well you maintenance and stuff like that.
And how you abuse it. And if
right.
you're hauling a horse trailer, you're not supposed to be hauling and all that kind of stuff. Alan?
Yeah, I was going to say 1 to 2.
Okay.
I'm with him.
Yeah. And I am too. It's not really necessary to worry about your transmission until we're in that second 100,000 mile wrap. And then it is. Air conditioning systems. Would you go with me? Like one, they're going to deal with something on something major on the AC side. In the first 100,000.
Actually, it depends upon design of the system.
Okay.
A low mount compressor will be closer to 100.
Okay.
A high mount compressor lasts closer to 2.
Because of the temperature?
Because of oil.
Okay.
Your low mount sludges easier.
So your compressor sludge easier.
Yes.
Okay. So, and this is the air conditioning compressor you're talking
right.
about that has oil in it, because we have to paint the
right,
picture
right,
with our mouth.
Right, yeah.
So you're talking about the air conditioning, it's been your experience that the air conditioning compressors that are mounted in the lower half of the clock, so 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock, the bottom half of the motor compartment as opposed to the top half
right.
of the motor compartment.
Right.
Is the difference between 100,000 miles of life on the AC system and 200.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever...
I've never heard that.
Yeah.
Not that I've ever heard. I've never thought about it that way.
Neither have I. Okay.
Eric spends a lot of time thinking.
Does he ever work?
Once in a while.
Does he once in a while?
Yeah.
Okay.
That is one thing I've not been accused of.
Working or thinking.
In both. No, that's me, Alan. I don't do either.
Especially thinking.
Okay. So I'm telling people... I can fix a lot of what you got for the sales tax on a new car. I can do lots of stuff on your car. And your insurance is cheaper. And it's not because I want you to not, I want to work on your old car. It's just, this is what I tell my mom.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean? It's just kind of, this is the way it is.
Not to mention, working on new cars is expensive and difficult. I mean, between the, you know, the amount of computerized and these pass-throughs and these, you know, they're going to be under warranty, but boy, when they get out of warranty, you're going to pay.
Turbocharged direct injections?
Yes.
They get expensive.
And we're going to talk about that because we're going to come up with warranty, but it dovetails nicely into what I'm talking about. The next thing we're going to talk about is people still have this mentality of oil change intervals and all the intervals. Now, we have two different things going on here, okay? There are shops in town, there are shops all over the nation that are representing that the time frame in your owner's manual is unusual, unnecessary, and not applicable to our climate that we live in. So right now we have, I think you'll agree that many of the newer model cars don't have anything other than 10,000 mile oil changes. And there's a whole lot of time between when you first start having to do maintenance, and many times it's 100,000 miles.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we're doing nothing but doing 10 oil changes in the first 100,000 and nothing else except maybe a tire rotation.
Yeah.
So now our industry's struggling because we don't have the business we had before. And I suggest to you that there's people out there that are changing that dialogue about your owner's manual. And that's when I hear, well, he said that manual's not written for Arizona. He says that's not a good idea. He says, this is the other shop. The other shop says that they need to see me every 3,000. And then we have shops, and I've seen this more than once, and it's been called to my attention recently. We're putting a full synthetic oil in your car, but we're doing the oil change sticker at 3,000 and 5,000 miles. And really, it should be between 10,000 and 15,000 miles. So we're calling them back in, and we're not giving them the benefit of the full oil change, of the oil capability. I saw not too long ago somebody did a premium oil change with a 3,000 mile call on the door sticker. I don't know about that. That kind of bugs me.
Yep.
So I think you'll agree that our industry is in flux. If we all pay attention to the owner's manual, we're going to lose some business because the intervals in the new car owner's manual, let's go in the last 20, 25 years, the intervals have gone crazy.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, we have to make up stuff now. So we're giving you free oil changes so that we can have a good look at your car. And we get a free look at your car.
Yep.
And so that creates a problem because I'm sticking to the owner's manual, but you're not. And so the customer's in between us. And so who's right and who's wrong? And the default, I think, has to be the owner's manual because it's written for the car. It's written by the person that designed it. But then again, I don't know. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. Real quick, let me tell you about Auto Dynamics. It's up in Sun City. Been around a long time. I've known Chuck and his son, Derek. I've known Chuck for, 40 years. And they have a good shop in Sun City. I believe it to be the very best shop in Sun City for general auto repair. Derek is the son. He runs the one at Grand Avenue just west of 99th Avenue. So if you're in Sun City and you're looking for a good auto repair shop, I would like to recommend, and certainly with all the trust in the world, you'll be treated fairly, is Auto Dynamics in Sun City. So at the end of the day, we were talking about what do we do here and what we do there, but we're all of a sudden, the calls have blown up, so we're going to them. Tom, you're up first. What can we do for you? Tom? You know what? Maybe we put Tom on hold and go to Ray. Would that be okay?
Oh, yeah.
Ray?
Hi, Mark.
Hi. Go right ahead, Ray.
Mark, I have a 2000 Toyota Tacoma with the four-cylinder engine. It has 362,000 miles on it. I have a check engine light, P0171, and occasionally it cranks for a few seconds, then starts. first thing in the morning.
171 system lean.
Okay.
So it
could be
air leak.
Wait a minute. Okay. I don't want you to take that tat, that position. You really need to replace the, let's start with the fuel pressure test and make sure that we have the appropriate fuel pressure, and then let's replace the oil, the fuel filter, because it could be plugged, which would cause a lean condition.
Oh, we don't got three whiskers. Right.
Come on, let me finish, okay? Let me just finish. and then let's do this, and let's do that, and let's do this, and let's do that.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a lot of that kind of fluff out there.
Right.
But let's turn it around, Mr. Big Shot. He's at your shop. What are you doing, first, second, and third?
First of all, I'm going to look at actual fuel trims at when they're high and when they're low. If they're high at some point, that's why the code's there. And
okay, hold on. Fuel trims, he's looking at a chart, and the middle of the chart is the horizon. And above the chart means it's running rich, and below the chart it's running lean. So when it's running lean, it has more air than fuel, and then when it's running rich, it has more fuel than air, right?
Right.
So you're looking at the trims, you're looking at the numbers to see if, and you want this motor to be right there zigzagging in the middle.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Okay.
And so basically, yeah, when does it do it, and then any driving conditions, his extended cranking time is an indication it may be on the fuel delivery site, but it could be just an air leak, and then it's just not reading signals right and things like that. So there's a variety of tests.
That's the best we can do for you, Ray. The issue really is I think I'm going to throw this out there. If a shop's going to have it, they want it overnight.
Yeah, because they're going to want to do the cold start.
Exactly, and we want to be able to plug in our scanner and watch what happens, and we want to have a fuel pressure gauge on there at the same time.
Right.
And so we want to know what it had fuel pressure in the morning before the key was on, and after when the key is on, after the key is on, because there's going to be a slight difference there.
Yes.
And then we're going to go ahead and watch all the trims, and we're going to watch the codes. We don't really care about the codes. We've already been pointed in the right direction.
Right.
And that's going to cost between what and what?
$130 to $170.
Okay. And it's going to be something that we're going to know exactly what's going on at the end of that time frame.
Right.
Now, what's the possibility it's going to be a vacuum leak at the Skookulator valve?
Actually, in something of that age with broken or soft or brittle rubber and plastic and things like that, very likely.
And that's going to cause a lean condition that's not going to necessitate a fuel pump replacement or anything like that.
No.
We're going to fix a problem that's lying to the computer.
Right.
We're telling the computer the truth. Okay.
Yeah.
Ray, that's the best we can do, but we're pretty sure that the lean condition is something that is not going, on a 1 to 10 scale, that's going to be a what in difficulty to identify the concern. Hold your fingers up. Okay, we got 4 and 5, and I agree. On a 1 to 10 scale, it's a 4 to 5 to figure out what that is. Okay?
Okay, yeah, I live, I'm near Blackwell, so I'll send
it. Oh, wait. You got it. You can't throw that in at the end. Okay?
Oh.
I can't speak for him. He's probably in the $400 to $500 range just to talk to you. And then I'll tell you what, if you're gonna take it to Blackwell, tell Blackwell that I'll be your representative, and his diagnosis and estimate needs to go through me.
Okay. I also go near Harker sometimes. Should I just... Either one, right?
No. Let me tell you something.
No.
Ellen at Harker's, I'm more scared of her than I am Blackwell. Okay? I love Bob and Ellen at Harker's. But I'm going to be real particular about tickling the bear when it comes to Ellen. Okay? So, no, you cannot use that at Harker's. Okay?
Okay. Do not poke the bear at Harker. Okay. Yeah, that's
right. Oh, God.
You just stuck your foot in your mouth.
Gil, take him down right now, and let's move on to Brian. Brian, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, fellas. I called you, Mark, several weeks ago about my 07 Hyundai Entourage van with a 3.8, I believe, liter V6 and about 83,000 on it. And I was getting lifter noise, and sometimes pretty pronounced, but only on cold startup, not after it's been run at all. So we had the conversation where I, decided to take it to a Hyundai dealer, and I let him have it for three mornings, and they claim not to hear it, which I don't believe, because this happens 90% of the time, and sometimes it's just a little, what I call lifter noise, and sometimes, you know, it's several seconds.
Okay, okay.
And so I was just going to tell you, I got in a conversation with the place where I buy tires, and they've done some minor work for me, and he said, you know, we get a lot of vehicles in of different kinds that have lifter noise, and they're newer vehicles, and we took a Chevy pickup to the Chevy dealer about it to get a second opinion, and they claimed, oh, it's a normal condition, and I just wanted to give you that information to see what you fellows think about his opinion.
Well, we're not that's a do you beat your wife question. I mean, really, come on, I'm not commenting on somebody
still.
Else.
But you still beat your wife.
Yeah, you still beat your wife.
Yeah, you got to have still in there.
Okay.
Or else it's not as funny. It doesn't work if you don't have that.
Okay, fair enough. I am not, this is a crazy idea that I'm going to comment or even let you guys comment about somebody else saying something else. How many lifter noises have we fixed by fixing an exhaust leak?
Tons. Yesterday, only one or two.
Yeah. So everybody's out there going, da-da-da, ya-da-da, 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 and everybody's commenting about what it could be and what it couldn't be. That doesn't make any – that's – in my world, I don't care. I want to know who fixed it.
Yeah.
And it needs to make sense.
Right.
An exhaust leak, doesn't it make sense that it's there cold and after the motor warms up, it goes away?
Yeah.
So we can chase our ass all day long looking for something in the motor. We can put magic lotion potion in the tailpipe. We can put it in the gasoline. We can put it in the engine. We can wave a dead chicken around our head. We can flog beat the chicken on the hood. We can do all that stupid stuff. Can you tell I'm kind of wound up about
this? Yeah, just a bit.
It's just not productive. It's not productive, mm-hmm. And this is the kind of chatter we get off the internet.
Yeah.
The internet comes up with all kinds of guys, and half these guys wouldn't know which end of the screwdriver to stick in the door to steal the car. So I can't tell you.
Well, I think I'm in the East Valley with this vehicle, but I think I'm going to bring it up to Kurt because he's done work for me before, and it just doesn't seem right that this thing should clatter on cold startup.
Well, and then I think we talked about this at least once or twice before. My advice was, let's change the oil, and let's do an oil sample at 1,000 and an oil sample at 2,000 and see if we've got anything coming apart inside the engine.
Yeah.
And let's look to see if there's something really bad that's causing this camshaft wear, lifter wear, rocker wear, or something like that. Mm-hmm. But that would kind of move us away from, okay, it's not anything that's going to be there forever. But anyway, thank you very much, Brian. Aaron, you stay right there. And I don't know if Tom's back, but if he is, then Tom will be first, Aaron will be second, and anybody else at 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Kurt's here from Kurt's Automotive, and so is Eric. He adopted him a long time ago. And then my son, Alan, and my name is Mark Salem, and we'll be right back. Okay. Mark Salem here with Kurt from Kurt's Automotive. Eric, his right-hand man and sidekick, and my right-hand man, my son, Alan, and my sidekick. And we're here at your service, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to join us. I'm going to get to Tom and Aaron in just a second, but I got a little business. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a really great shop. I've known Nate for a long time, and I'm really impressed with his service, repair, and parts kind of handle on the diesels, on the Ford, the General Motors, and the Dodge. So if you're up in the I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road area and you want to find somebody that does just diesels, then Strictly Diesel would be your good place to go. If you've got a problem and you can't find a good diesel shop, that would be a good place to start, no matter where you live. So Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, and you can go to their website, strictlydiesel.com, and they've got parts and all kinds of good information on their website as well. So Nate at Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Tom, thank you for calling back. How can I help you?
Morning. I had a question. I had recently had a situation, and it was with I call it a chain store. A lot of them have a tire name up front, but they're independent, or I don't even know if they're franchised. Long story short, got in there. The service writer that I talked to wasn't there at pickup time, and then an $800 job. When we got there, it said $1,200 on it. So as far as remedy, or where would you go to for resolution, you know, just dealing with a problem, you can't just stand there and get in the guy's face.
So in a short, you went in, the bid was $800, and when you got there to pick up your car, it was $1,200.
Yes.
If I was that service rider, I wouldn't have been there either.
We knew he was coming. Yeah.
Wait a minute. We're laughing at someone's misfortune.
Right, right.
Okay. And Kurt, I heard you say that, and I want to counsel you about that because you should not have made fun.
I'm sorry, Dad.
Tom. You know, I am speechless. We're going to go one at a time. Raise your hand if you've got something. If you've got your thoughts in order. I don't see any hands here. It's. Did you pay with a credit card?
We ended up paying cash with it, but in retrospect, we should have.
Yeah, I don't know that there is anything. Do you have anything? Did they explain to you? Yeah. What did they say to you? How did it get $400 more?
Well, he got there. Then you know, to replace the alternator was X amount of dollars, and then. Of course, you know, the idler, the tensioner, and the belt and everything. And then it turned out the alternator had a declutching on the end of it. And I still don't know where the extra $200 came, you know, the $1,200 on it.
Yeah.
So it was, and, you know, I sent my granddaughter down to pick up her car, and it was that kind of thing. So I don't know. For some reason, I just get the impression, you know, they're going to take the easy ones. If you know what I mean.
Okay. I got a couple of comments. First of all, if this was the granddaughter's transaction, no one's going to listen to you because she needs to be the mouthpiece of this dispute. So,
okay.
That doesn't mean you can't help ghostwrite her complaint to the chain's home office. It doesn't mean you can't ghostwrite the complaint to Yelp or to a lot of the other review places in the internet. It's something that she needs to be up front because, frankly, I don't know about you, Kurt, but I don't like it when I got to talk to dads about their 28-year-old daughter's car.
No, it's a rough one.
Yeah, it's a tough thing. Now, I'm just using examples.
Right.
In your particular case, I think, I don't know, if it were my daughter, I would say, let's start with Yelp. Let's start with some nice complaints. Let's start with just some nothing fire-breathing, nothing bad words, just some real, I went in, they said this, and I went in, they told me there was a lot of exceptions, then they had to do extra.
I think the first thing I would do is call back the guy whoever approved the estimate, call back the person who gave them the estimate. If that guy wasn't there, that's the first person who I would call back and talk to.
And that's a good idea. That's a good idea. And the paper trail should tell them who that was.
Yeah.
Who gave them the estimate.
Yeah, who the service rider initially was.
Yeah.
1 minute.
What happens if the person that gave the estimate was the technician, and then when he got there, the bill was $1,200 instead of $800?
It sounds like they added a tensioner and a belt and stuff, which is not uncommon, but there should have been conversation before that ever happened.
No question about that.
No.
Okay. And then, so then he has two choices. He can either say fine and live with it and have this be a $400 lesson to the young lady with the car. That's really all he can do.
Yeah.
There's really nothing more.
Because if he got the product, the breakup isn't did he not get what he paid for, evidently. The breakup is he didn't get told what they were going to do to the car after they upped the ante and added more parts.
And it looks kind of shady that way.
Yeah.
It looks, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's shady is a difficult word to swallow on that. It's real self-serving.
Yes.
And they could have called back and said, we have to make this change. There's a whole lot that can go on there. But it's real self-serving to just complain that we had to do this and we had to elevate this to some. I'm thinking, anybody thinking with me, I wonder if it was the belt all along and the tensioner all along that wasn't driving the alternator.
Yeah, you just...
Yeah, well, they put a new alternator on it, and they had the tensioner in the belt, and all of a sudden the new alternator's not charging, and then all of a sudden all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that happens.
Yeah.
And you know why we know that happened, old gray-haired guy?
Because it happened.
It happened at our shop, and that's where we learned it.
All the time.
All the time. That's exactly right. That's right. It's not nothing that we haven't seen before.
Nope.
Tom, I don't know. I'm agreeing with Alan and these guys. I think a nice letter to the chain store about the difference. And I think the two sentences I'd like you to say is I would have liked to have been involved in the decision-making process when they started spending $400 more. I would have liked to have my old parts back. I would have said that. And I don't think it's fair for them to take and increase my estimate by 25% without my authorization.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Okay.
And most of these stores, are they company stores, franchise, a lot of them where you see a tire name out on the front of the building? Or
they can be either.
They can be either. They can be a company-owned store, which means there's a traveling manager, or they can be a franchise. The franchise guy will be more interested in getting this handled, in Mark Salem's opinion, than the corporate store. Yeah, the guy who has 40 of these stores, and he's got these kinds of problems every day of his life. Okay, we're going to take a break, and Aaron, please wait for me, because I'm going to take you the minute I open my mouth on the other side of these commercials. Oh, boy. I'm telling you what, there's something going crazy at this place. I'll tell you what, everybody down here. Is anybody not got their panties all watered up? Holy. All right, let's start. First of all, I'm going to Aaron. I don't care what you guys say. Aaron, thank you. Thank you very much. How can we help you? You got 100% of our attention.
You sure it's 100%?
All right, sounds good. Are you there?
I am. Go ahead.
Okay, hey, I got an oath. I had it since it was new. It's time to do like some upgrades and some like repairs and stuff. I'm wondering, is there a good Land Rover mechanic in the West Valley that you guys know about? It's not going to kill me like an arm and a leg for price.
Here's the problem with the question. Is the real problem with the question is that the Land Rover is like a 0.111 of the cars in the fleet. So you're putting two words together that trouble me. Good and Land Rover. I'm teasing you. And so the first question is good Land Rover? Do you guys lean on anybody with Land Rovers at all? Do you know anybody?
No.
Okay, the answer is no. If you're going to do upgrades, I think what I would do, have you figured on what you want to upgrade you want to do? Have you figured out what the brand name of the exhaust you want to put on it?
Well, I was thinking more like lifts as far as upgrades. But immediately, I want to do engine-wise. I want to, like, do some repair work on the engine.
Okay. There's a lot of us that are in the performance division, which is the four of us in here. It's not having a target and not having a path is the most difficult thing because the expectations of all the people involved are likely to be very different.
Yeah.
So when you start talking about upgrading the motor and stuff like that or doing modifications to the motor, if you're going to, you know, you want to put a blower on it? Is that kind of what you're thinking?
No, if anything, I would just do like a two or three, even before that.
Okay.
Some repairs like some wheel speed sensors and things like that, gasket replacements and all that.
So I think he just wants to bring it up to par and then modify the suspension.
Right. Okay.
So he may be looking for like an overlounding outfit because they work on a lot of those Land Rovers. That's their specialty because your lift shops, they don't do Land Rovers. But your overlanding people, that's what they use a lot of.
Okay. And where are they located?
We have one we personally know. And he's up in the very North Valley, though. So.
Okay. Well, what's the name of it?
What is it? Vagabond.
Yeah. Vagabond.
Vagabond. Yeah.
Okay. So we've got Vagabond is one name that we've accessed, and it didn't come with a bunch of bad words after.
Right.
There's others. I'm thinking, like, he might even check with he's in the – what part of the valley is he in?
Where you at, Aaron?
He said West Valley.
I'm in the West Valley. Okay. I'm in Glendale.
I was thinking that Desert Rat, I think, does some of that stuff as well as flying high on the overlanding as well. It looks like he's got two things going on here.
Agree.
He wants to do the lift, he wants to do maybe tires, wheels, he wants to maybe do some overlanding stuff, but then he wants to do some basic.
I'll do all that later.
But he wants to
do all that later.
Okay, we understand.
Immediately, I want to get it up to par.
Yeah, so he needs a good
maintenance
repair shop rather than an off-road shop.
Okay.
Yeah, he needs
both.
Yeah.
He's in the West Valley. Harker's?
Yeah.
Harker's?
I mean, yeah, Harker's, 38th Avenue and Ames School. I don't think Land Rover, we need to hunt down a Land Rover guy to do oil changes.
No, we all do Land Rover work in our shop.
Yeah.
That type of stuff.
Yeah, anything that's got spark plugs and exhaust pipes and got a key for the ignition, we can do maintenance on and stuff like that. I don't think you need that. Let's do that. Let's get it up to par.
Yeah.
Let's get it up to par first. And during that process, pay attention to what they see as they're getting it up to par.
Right.
What kind of services does it need?
Yeah.
What kind of defects does it have? And then after that, then you'll decide. And if that shop pleases you, then afterwards you say to the shop, okay, I'm ready to start looking at lifting the vehicle. And so give me some advice on where to go and who to talk to.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you're going to have that chain of responsibility.
Yeah.
So we're going to go from one shop who did a good job to his referral.
Right.
And that's a good idea.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Well, Aaron, what year was that Land Rover again?
It's a 2003. I got 100,000 miles on it.
Gosh, your wife's been driving the wheels off of that thing, huh?
I'll tell you who the smartest.
You know, I park it. I barely drive it. It's like my weekend toy, but I want to like get it up to par and, you know, play with it a little more.
The smartest Land Rover guy I know works for us.
Is that right?
Yeah. Daniel. That, sure. He works at a Land Rover dealership for years and years and years, and he's into overlanding, and he's up in Sedona right now overlanding. I mean, I would at least pick his brain as far as what to get and what not to, you know.
You're right. It's better than picking his nose, isn't it? Okay. You're good. Okay, Aaron, here's the deal. Have you got a pencil handy?
I do have a pencil.
Okay. You're going to send an email with your information to Alan.
Yeah, yeah.
Do that. At
SalemBoysAuto.com.
Alan at SalemBoysAuto.com. Our service writer is a Land Rover
guru.
He's a guru.
Yeah.
And what we're going to do is we're going to put the two of you together on his time. Okay. So we're going to give him. You're going to send Alan your contact information. Alan's going to hand it to the service writer, and then he will contact you, and that's okay with us.
Yeah.
I'm not using any names because I don't want people to start calling asking for Alan because they think he's a Land Rover guy. Because my son Alan just got out of jail, and we're just trying to reacclimate him to society anyway. So, but anyway, Alan at SalemBoysAuto.com, and we'll make that connection for you, and he will give you good advice.
Yep.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Yep. You bet. It's gosh darn, it gets tough around here sometimes.
Yeah. You want to take Mike?
Mike, God bless you. Thank you very much. How can we help you?
Hey, guys. Hey, Mark. How are you?
Good, good.
Hey, I got a 2008. I've called you on this car before. I have a 2008 Lexus IS250. It's got about 170,000 on it. And I just wanted you guys' opinion on this transmission. It's a sealed transmission. And my owner's manual doesn't have any maintenance on the transmission.
Okay.
So what do you guys think?
Well, I'll take it first. I'm thinking we take a 1-inch hole saw and drill a hole in the side of the case. And then we just stick a suck tube down in there and suck all the
You know what's easier, Mark? We can just cut it through the console and go in through the top.
Oh, and then he has an extra cup holder.
Yeah.
You know what? Eric, take it.
You know, I've seen a lot of these transmissions that say they got lifetime fluid, no servicing needed, to blow up at 100,000 because they never got maintenance. Mm-hmm. And I've seen ones that say should maintain it, and it's the exact same transmission, put in a different manufacturer's vehicle, they maintain it regularly, and they run 200,000. So I don't care what they say, they need some maintenance.
Right. Well, right, wrong, or indifferent, manufacturer tells you don't touch it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's possible to service them.
Nothing in my book about it.
I mean, what do you do? What would you do?
Nothing in my book.
There's always a drain and fill on them.
Okay.
There always is.
Yeah. It
you only have two choices. Either to follow the manufacturer's recommendations, and notice the manufacturer, the guy who built the car, and then the recommendation is not the Bible, it's not the law, it's not one of the Ten Commandments. What Eric's is saying is there are times you have, and frankly so have we, we've done a suck and fill on those things.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to suck all the fluid out and put new fluid in it. That does happen. If it makes you feel good, the only question I would have if I was the customer is, what fluid are you going to use on this secret transmission with sealed unit? And there's going to be a little research we need to do to find out what fluid to put back in it.
Yeah.
Agreed?
Yeah, the thing is there's really only half a dozen transmission manufacturers. So, I mean, your BMW has the same transmission as your, you know, Chrysler, and the Mercedes is the same as the Chrysler. And
Jaguar.
Jaguar, yeah, they all share. So BMW, Mercedes say don't service it, and Chrysler says service it. You know, Jaguar says service it. The ones that get serviced last way longer.
Mm-hmm. And I agree. I agree. The preventative maintenance, this is one of the things that I feel comfortable, and clearly you and Kurt do too, and Alan, we all feel comfortable. We're going to deviate from what the manual says.
Yes.
It's in your best interest.
Right. Okay.
The question then is off the top of your head, boys, how much is it going to cost to flush and fill that transmission with the appropriate stuff? Give me a window. I'm not going
to have 175 to 225.
Alan?
I have no idea.
Okay. I was going to say 250.
And I was going to say 300 or less.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. Mm. But, yeah, none of us have any heartburn with that. It's going to take a little bit of research to find out what to go back in.
Well, he said it's a Lexus. It's going to be your standard Toyota fluid, so I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah, you got to be careful because some of that Ram fluid's $20 a quart.
Yeah,
yeah.
It is.
Some of the new eight-speed stuff,
yeah.
Is it $20 a quart?
It's $20 a quart.
A quart.
Is that our cost, or is that what we're charging?
No, I think that's list.
Oh, okay. Because if it costs Eric $20, we have to be careful because he's going to charge $50 for it.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
But so, yeah, and
no, $65.
Yeah, and those things take a pretty good amount of fluid, right?
Yeah, 10 quarts or something like that. Yeah.
And the new 10 speeds.
Oh, wow.
Eight speed Dodge. So yours is different than we're talking about, but we're starting to see this trend ramp up slightly with respect to don't touch. I think it's a marketing. I think the marketing people wrote that, oh, you don't need to service our transmission. It's sealed for life.
Well, right. BMW done that with the ZF. They said lifetime fluid, and that was a misprint when it got translated from German to English. I talked to some people that knew, and it's the same transmission they put in the Jaguar, and they recommend 60,000-mile services.
So there we've got a lot of those kinds of problems.
Yeah.
So the default, though, let's use this the default is wouldn't it be a good idea to at least look at the fluid and maybe the filter at 100,000-mile mark?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
At the latest.
Yeah. Okay. Alrighty.
Okay, Mark, what was that name of that transmission shop that you always recommend?
Automatic Transmission Exchange.
Okay, yeah. Where is that located?
40th Street in Washington. 40th Street in Washington.
Okay, would that be a good place to take it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, any general repair or fill over to automatic transmission, that'd be no problem at all. And you know what? Phil's really good. He's one of the old-time guys, like Kurt, with just a lot of brain but no hair. And what he'll do is if he can't find how to drain it, he'll just drill a hole in the case and just drain it out, and then he'll put some
the console.
Plug. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'll just give him a call and see what he recommends.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Like I said, the book doesn't say anything about it. It's got 170 on it, so...
Okay,
and it runs fine. Everything's fine.
All righty. Well, good luck to you, Mike. Thank you very much. Okay, folks, we're going to be here for another hour. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We have made a mess of the first hour. There's no question about that. When we come back, though, I still want to go back to what we talked about at the very beginning of last hour. And this is the idea that some in our industry has a bad habit of deviating from the owner's manual. And it always favors them. It doesn't favor the customer. So we don't hear anybody saying, oh, gosh, you can go a lot more than 10,000 miles with that $150 synthetic oil change. Yeah, go to 200. It doesn't make any difference. You know, we don't hear that. Oh, you can't do that. Oh, yeah. that oil can't go that far. If you're going to put synthetic in it, your engine's going to love you, and it will love you, but we really need to change that at 3,000 miles. That's a problem.
Yeah.
That's a problem. We have to get our rap together. We have to be able to come onto the same page. And that's you guys can't imagine the emails I get and the phone calls I get Monday through Friday, 7 days a week. And this is dominating it now. I saw an ad the other day, and it's a ad that says buy three, get one for free.
Mm.
The small print was eye-opening. It only applies to these three tire sizes.
Yeah.
You know, and then you have to do an alignment, and you have to do this, and you have to do that, and it's not covered here, and it is covered there, and it's not covered here, and it is covered there. It's just amazing the trash that comes out of that small print.
I know.
And it's it's disheartening for our industry, but this is what I'm going to leave you to dwell on. I think we're in this mess right now because the newer cars need so less service than the cars we've been every year.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting better and better on the new cars. And so now we're making up our own rules. And if I hear it once, I hear it 100 times like you guys do. That's not written for Arizona. That manual's not written for Arizona. Hear that?
Yeah.
All the time.
I got a story about that when we get back.
Okay, hang on to
it. I will.
But those are the issues. The issues is our industry is kind of start. If we do what we're supposed to do, our business is going to drop a little bit because the newer cars just have different intervals. Different, longer, better. We don't do spark plugs at 10,000 miles anymore. We do it at 100,000 miles.
Yeah.
There's a big difference. But we got spark plugs that cost how much? What's the most expensive spark plug?
$12 to $15 a plug.
Yeah, we've seen 25 and 30.
The early North Stars, I think, were 30 or 35 a plug.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So those are the kinds of issues it's going to be different for the next few years. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Mark Salem here with my son, Alan. Together we have 712 years of experience. We have Kurt and his son-in-law, Eric.
Yep.
God bless you for marrying his daughter and having to put up with him, too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. He got me. He was after.
I'm
a nice guy, Mark.
I got you. And how many years experience have you guys got?
I've got over 20.
And you?
40.
Okay, so 60.
Yeah.
And what, you've 30?
Yeah, 25 probably.
Okay, and then I'm with you. Mm-hmm. I started in 80, 40 years. 40, yeah. 41, 42 40, years.
Yeah.
So you got a lot of experience here. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're talking about cars, 602-508-0960. I'm going to tell you quick about a car shop in Mesa that I'm also very proud to be on our list of best car repair shops, Thompson's Auto Repair. Been around since 1970. Brian and Thelma come from families in Mesa that started in the gas station business in the 60s and 70s. Both of them knows what it's like to have somebody come home at night and dinner time and smell a little bit like gasoline. Okay, the two of them, you just have to meet them to understand why this is the only shop in Mesa I can recommend. It's not, I'm sure there's other good shops out there, but this is the best. So if you're in Mesa, Main Street, just east of Stapley Drive, they're on Main Street, just east of Stapley, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Let's get Jim real quick, and then we're going to finish our conversations. Jim, good morning.
Good morning. I have a 2017 Toyota Tundra, and just before, it had about 27,000 miles, and my wife took the truck into the dealer to have the oil changed. And during the oil change, they informed her that it needed the injectors flushed.
Oh, no. Hold on a minute. Stop laughing, you guys. You're embarrassing me. Okay?
Yeah.
Stop laughing. I think in your wife's defense, I think she misunderstood what the shop said. Okay, we're not going to talk about the shop said.
I looked at the invoice.
Hold on. No. Listen. Yeah. He said he didn't want to flush the injectors. He wanted to flush your wallet.
Oh, you know what? I think you're right.
Yes. He just used it was the wallet. Yeah. And so what did you say?
She went ahead and did it.
How much was it?
$228.
Ooh. Oh, you know what? I got bad news for you. I just looked up your car on your Tundra. We're down here on Warner and I-10. That needs to be done every 10,000 miles.
That's right.
And I'm going to beat their price by $50.
Can't you do it through the mail? Okay. Can it just send you the check, Mark?
I want to tell you something, Jim. My underwear is tied around my neck right now because an injector flush without symptoms is just a highway robbery as far as Mark Salem's concerned.
Well, that was only the first part of the hurt. The second part was where I questioned her getting it done. Then I had to put up with her.
All right, Mark, you're on.
I can't help you with that. I'm sorry. I can't help you with that. And I'm not going to help you with that. I'm not very good with the marital relations.
You just said you was.
I am with one person.
No.
Myself. Even Renee doesn't trust me. Jim, you're on your own, big dog. I'm sorry.
If you really want, next time, have your wife just say, it's really simple, and this is where they get really flounder, is just say, can you show me where that's recommended by Toyota in my owner's manual?
That's it. Right there. Teach her that. Yeah. Teach her that.
And if it's, it's 27,000 miles on a Toyota, not a chance.
And another thing they could do, too, is write down that I need this on the back of your business card and put the amount on there.
Yeah.
And tell me that I am absolutely due for this on the back of your business card and then initial it.
Yeah.
Because they're not going
to
do
There's just real quick, there's only one reason to do a fuel injector flush, and these guys all agree, is to aid in the diagnostic process. Simple as that. And you're going to be well aware of that. That is not a routine maintenance type of a deal. That is, once in a blue moon, we'll add an additive to say, I just need to know better, worse, or the same. And that's
a change.
It.
We're looking for change.
Yeah, that's it. No better, much better, much worse. That's it.
And then another thing I could add to that, too, is I've never done any fuel injection work on any of the high-performance trucks I have. So if you just, when the freeway's clear and nobody's out there, if you can see how fast the thing will go, that really helps flush the injectors a lot, too.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
Are you volunteering to borrow his truck for the night?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
So
now,
I was going to say, our customers that.
Believe me, it made absolute no difference in the way the truck ran.
It made a difference, but not in the way the truck ran.
it did run a little better.
Yes, it was a little bit lighter, yes.
Yeah. Your wife's purse was just $220 lighter.
Now, I wish you had not said a dealer. I wish you would have said a shop. But our industry, whether it's the chain, the independent, the mom and pop, the dealer, the fleet, we're every single aspect of my industry is directly responsible for creating that kind of perception that if you don't have your injectors flushed, it's going to cost you more money in the long run.
Yeah.
So it's not fair. But, Alan, how often do we flush injectors at our shop?
We don't. I mean, I can't remember the last time we did it.
And it's
every once in a while we'll have a shop come in because we have a bench tester for the old like TBI or not TBI, but the old injectors, old GM injectors, and we'll flow test them. But they're out of the vehicle on a thing, and we can look at them and show them before and after and stuff like that. But that's few and far between.
How about you, Eric? How often are you flushing?
Is a flush we don't do your normal your newer direct injection
totally different animal?
Are totally different. They do have a carbon buildup problem, and there is a additive that we run about every 15,000, but it's not even that much.
Okay.
But it's also part of a complete package of cleaning the carbon out of the intake and all that stuff.
And they come in with a rough idle.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And what we're talking about fuel injection version 1.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Work with me on this. And version 2.
Right.
Okay. So the version 1 is everything we've had since the mid-90s.
86 and up.
86 and up. Okay, I'll go with that. 86 and up. But just recently, we've gone to this new direct injection. And so that's kind of version 2. Version 2 has its own set of problems we're all well aware of.
Yes. Right.
Major problems.
Right.
Major problems. And I don't know that anybody has ever sat down and said, this is going to fix the problem that we have, because we don't have the fix yet.
No, we don't. We have things that help, but
that's it.
Fix.
But as far as Alan and you are concerned, to do this as a routine maintenance, because your car is going to love you more, the only person that's going to love you more is the person that's getting the $220. And besides that, I'm surprised. That's a hell of a lot of money for a fuel injection flush.
It's not surprising, but that's a ton of money, yeah.
That is. Yeah. What would you charge on a diagnostic? What are you going to charge for a fuel injection flush for a diagnostic?
If I was going to just do it, it would probably be $100 or something like
Alan?
That.
I don't know. I can tell you that the GDI is probably about that much, that service, but the chemicals are like 75, and
okay.
It takes about an hour.
But you're talking about version 2.
Totally different.
Different issue. I'm thinking $100 to $150, because we're talking about an hour's worth of work and some chemicals.
Yeah. Right.
So that's the diagnostic part. This is going to get us to the next step. But you brought up a good point. If there's an engine miss, that's when that might be flushing the injectors might be appropriate to diagnose that.
Yeah, and we've done that on the version 1 injectors. Mm-hmm. When we're dealing with an engine miss and it isn't compression, it isn't ignition, we'll run an injector flush. So we do have a kit. We use it very seldom. But if it's to diagnose an issue, yeah, we're gonna try it.
It's kind of that spot where it's a misfire that you can feel, but it's not bad enough yet to where you get a check engine light. Yeah. Or so, it's just kind of a rough idle, you know. It's in that sweet spot there.
And the check engine light comes from, we've got too much fuel running out of the tailpipe. We're running too rich. We're running too lean. We've got a knock. We've got all these other kind of stuff. The computer's saying, I see something that's wrong that's related to an injector misfire. And so, I don't know what to tell you, Jim. How long have you been married to that witch?
We've been married 55 years.
Jim, if you could have seen the looks on these guys' face when I said that.
I hope you bleeped that.
Jeez. Jim, I want to tell you something. What part of town do you live in?
We're North Phoenix.
In North Phoenix? I want you to send me an email, let me think here now. How can we
How are you going to get out of this one, Mark?
Yeah. I'm going to tell you how I'm going to get out of this one.
I'm waiting.
Kurt's going to give you a free oil change.
Alan, you're supposed to be on my side.
No, we'll pay for it.
Oh, okay.
Wait a minute. He said he had a 2017 Tundra.
Yeah.
And he had a wife, and he has a receipt with an injector flush, okay?
Uh-huh.
All right, here's the deal. Kurtz is up at I-17 in Bell. Are you listening to me, Jim?
Yes.
Okay. When he comes in for service on in a 17 Tundra, and he has an invoice with a fuel injection flush, the first $100 I'll pay for. Because I made that stupid joke about his wife. And so, Kurt, and if Jim or his wife comes in and they have those pieces of evidence, see, I got to think about all the people that are going to try to sneak in on this deal. But he has an invoice with a fuel injection. He's got a 17 Tundra.
Yeah.
And he's got a wife who paid for it.
Hey, Jim, when you come up there, we'll make sure that you spend at least $100, even if I got to give you a rebate, okay?
Even if it's another fuel injection.
Because you have a way of taking the fuel injector thing out.
we're gonna flush you like you ain't never been flushed. All right, $100, Alan. When they call you, give them a company credit card and pay $100 for me being able to. And please tell your wife I am sorry. It was a stupid thing to do, but it was damn funny. Jim, you should have seen the looks on their face in this studio.
It went from just a simple oil change to the injector flush. It wasn't like we asked them to do anything else.
Like I said, business is tight, and the service intervals are longer, and our industry is struggling because when you put out a car, we used to change the oil every 3,000 miles, so we got to bite at you at every 3,000. Now we're going to see you once a year, maybe once a year.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, we've lost a lot of our business, so we're going to start flushing your wallet. They just did it to the injectors. All right, I got to go. But thank you, Jim. $100, don't forget that. Okay? Yeah. I'm going to catch flack over that from now until a long time.
I'm still not sure you're through it, Mark.
You're right. I'm just going to take a break. Because I can't even talk. Dan, stay right there, and Mark's going to get his stuff together, and we'll be right back.
Raised up from
20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. We're here down at the studios in South Tempe. We've got Eric and Kurt from Kurt's Automotive at I-17 in Bell. Alan, my son, who's a derivative of me, is sitting here next to us.
No, I'm not.
There's four of us here that are having
a lot. You're adopted.
Never wanted to do more right this second.
Oh, God. I don't know. This is going to be a BOS. You know what I mean? You know what BOS stands for? Best of show.
Yeah.
When Mark's sick, it doesn't feel like doing the show. We throw one of these on there.
Oh, no. This one's going right in the trash can.
Oh, God. Well, I hope Jim can cover the. Listen, between you and me, if 100 ain't happy, you can go to 2.
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes to make her happy, you can go to 2. I'm just telling you that right now. All right, let's go to Dan. Dan, good morning, buddy. You have our 100% of our attention.
Mark, good morning. Hey, enjoying your show.
Thank you.
Entertaining. So, hey, I've talked to you before on this, looking for opinion on. I got my old 44-year-old Chevy truck.
Okay.
And I got an oil question.
Okay.
It's V8 400 small block.
Okay.
And about 120,000 miles, occasional use. And I've got a little bit of oil smoking just till it warms up. And I've always used 30 weight with a little bit of STP in it. Kind of a old school, old guy, old truck situation. But my question is if would it be okay to switch to like a 10W30 high mileage oil or stick with the old straight weight 30 weight.
Wait a minute. What are we still talking about trying to fix this blue smoke on cold startup?
No, just to maintain it.
Oh.
I'm not, yeah.
I think you, I don't know. You guys get your answers formulated because I'm not calling his wife any names. But I'm telling you that right now. But I think you go to the dance with the same girl. If you're in good shape right now, I'm not quite sure. Yes, new technology would indicate that maybe 1030 or a 2050 might be an appropriate oil, but I say, you know, stick with what got you there. Kurt, what do you think?
Yeah, on this situation, I'm probably going to go that route because he said he's been adding STP, so there's going to be some buildup and some sludges and stuff. If he went with a multigrade and a thinner oil, his smoke would probably increase.
And I like you bring up a really good point there with respect to, I wonder if it would help if we just went out and rattled that motor up in the higher RPMs for a little while.
It'd shock it.
Yeah. I mean, run it kind of hard for a while.
Yeah, and got it oiled good and hot.
And rattled the pistons and rattled the valves and just kind of rattled everything.
More than likely on a small block 400, he's got valve seal issues from what he's describing, which is not a big deal.
Yeah. Alan, you want to chime in?
No, the truck's older than me, so I'm going to forward that to the ones that you guys.
Okay, Mr. You're the same age as.
Yeah, I know. Okay. The problem is I have a newer technology.
Focus.
Okay. I would personally be running the 1030, clean that system out, and see whatever's left is left. I mean, it's not going to hurt it, but. Mm. Kurt's right. You might increase your smoke output, but that's just magnifying the problem that you have. You're just covering up with the 30 weight.
And something else too. A 1030 flows like a 10 weight when it's cold, and flows like a 30 weight when it's hot. There's no such thing as peanut butter and water, although those are the visual extremes that I use in radio. Okay, but a 1030 flows like, the viscosity is like a 10 weight and like a 30 weight. Your motor really doesn't know the difference, and there's no way your motor's going to die early or late depending on whether you're using Valvoline or Chevron or Pennzoil.
Yeah. It's easier on your valve train to have a oil moving faster when it's cold.
And I agree with you. Yeah. I like the idea of the thinner mentality because we're flowing oil, and it runs faster. It picks up heat. It dissipates heat easier. All that good stuff. And zero-weight oil is something that we're already up against now.
We're 0.16.
Right, 0.16. Yeah. So when you talk to some of us old gray-haired guys and you're going to put a zero-weight oil in our car, we're leaving because you've lost your brains, young man. So, all righty.
I had a second question on batteries.
Okay.
On a newer car, 2017 Hyundai, the AGM valve regulated battery, which I guess there's limited. You can only get them from the dealership. Is there? What's the scoop on?
No, it does need an AGM battery, but it does not need to be purchased at the dealer. Aftermarket's making the same one.
Yeah, they're all over.
Yeah, they're all over.
It's common, especially your start to stop technology. Yep. Almost all of them have an AGM battery now. They're twice the price of the standard, mm-hmm. but
Yeah. Something gas mat or glass mat. What is it?
Absorbent glass mat.
Absorbent glass mat, yeah.
The bottom line is that they'd like you to believe that, but somebody in the back room of the auto parts store is putting their own tag on there, and that same battery is available to all the rest of us. So just shop around.
Okay.
But the answer is you're going to need to stick with the girl that took you to the dance, okay?
Yeah.
All righty.
Okay.
Thank you.
Excellent.
All right, Harry, you're up next.
Yeah, wow.
Hey, is this your Harry?
Yeah, that's our Harry.
Is it your Harry?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yes.
And he's gonna correct you, Mark.
You're on the air, Harry. Don't use any F words, okay?
Yeah,
okay. All right, go ahead.
Okay, I got a couple questions on oil and stuff. I've got two vehicles, and I drive them, 5,000, 6,000 miles a year, tops. And well, my truck even less. But I always use full synthetic.
Okay.
I'm just of the opinion it protects a little better, it even gives you a little better gas mileage, maybe, huh?
Well, that's the marketing strategy, but it has to do with oxidation when it turns to a tar and when it turns to a solid. That's what the benefit of synthetic is. But
right.
I'm going to comment on your oil change stuff. If my mother, and I do love my mother in spite of the fact that she couldn't always say that about me, if my mom was going a year and she was going 6,000 miles a year, I'd put her in a conventional oil, then a semi-synthetic, and then a full synthetic. But that year, most of the oil manufacturers say, hey, we need to change the oil at least once a year. So in your particular case, there's three oils, and they all have different oil change intervals. There's conventional, a blend, and a synthetic, and you just need to decide what'll get you through the mileage in 1 year. And if I were you, I'd change it in April at the beginning of the summer, so you go through the
well,
summer with
I
fresh.
Well, that's what I usually
do. Yeah.
Sure,
so, what are you going to put in Harry's next time he comes in?
We don't even run conventional no more.
Okay.
Our basic oil is a blend.
But Harry's got that EcoBoost with the twin turbos, so
yeah.
It's going to call for a synthetic.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. You don't want to mess with that.
So yeah, so some of them are just going to call for it, and he's just not going to get the full potential out of it.
And that's a nice way to put it. He's not going to benefit from the longevity because of the small amount he's driving a year. But that's it, Harry. That's it. Other than that, I've got a Camel in the backyard if you need to use any of his special...
1 minute.
Yep. Get the vehicle, they give you synthetic blend, and they're telling you that that's what they use. But they won't tell you how much synthetic is in the oil. It's just blend.
No.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows if it's 50-50 or 90-10. It's
3 to 5,000
on conventional, 5 to 7,500 on semi-synthetic, and 7,500 north, all the way to 20,000 on the sin. Those are the general parameters that we're all going to use. Anyway, Harry. Anyway, thanks for calling, buddy. Thank you. All righty, Mike, you're up next.
Yeah. Hey, Mark. Update. I have the Lexus 2008 Lexus transmission question earlier.
Uh-huh.
I called Arizona Transmission Exchange. He didn't answer, so I called Lexus, and they recommend the service manager recommended every 90,000 miles flush and fill. There's no filter.
Okay.
So he said at 175, he says bring it in. Probably do.
Okay. Hey, hold your sign. We'll be right back. Oh, boy. I don't know what my life's going to be like here in the near future. But, Mike, we did understand that you're the old 08 Lexus IS250 with 170,000, and we were talking about the tranny service. Just quickly give me the response that you just got today.
Yeah, the service writer at Lexus said it has to be flush and filled every 90,000 miles.
Okay. Okay, and what do we think about that statement?
I would agree. Yeah.
Okay, well, you got four agreements here that sounds like something that holds water, and it sounds like something that benefits the car owner more than it does the person that's doing the work. So we agree. Thank you, Mike. Thank you for clearing that up. Chuck, you're up next.
Yeah, hi, good morning, everybody. I didn't know there was such a thing as a four-wheel alignment.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if a four-wheel alignment's worth it. It's a 14 Passat, and I have a tiny bit of wiggle over 70 miles an hour, but that's about it.
Okay, well, it's not a good idea to go into your shop and have this conversation because you don't know the temperament of the people in the shop. But let's go back to the wiggle. How many years have you been married? I'm teasing you. Tell me about the wiggle.
Is probably over 40.
Okay. God bless you. I can tell you right now, my record, how long mom and I been married? 47 years? It's over today, too.
There you go.
Let me ask you a question. The wiggle, is it in the seat of your pants, in the steering wheel? What is it?
It's in the wheel, and it's slight.
Okay. Here's what I'm thinking, and these guys are going to, I hope, agree with me. First of all, when we do a four-wheel alignment, we want to make sure that the back end of the car is following the front end of the car. That's it. Mm-hmm. And we're looking for tire wear, and we're looking for reasons to do that work. In my world, it's not a maintenance issue. It's not something that you have to have once a year. We're looking for symptom-driven reasons to do that. So in your particular case, I just have somebody address the wiggle. I wouldn't go in there and ask for a four-wheel alignment because there's a good chance that you're going to have the wiggle when you leave, plus your wallet's going to be a little thinner.
Yeah. Under real quick, because I hear this all the time, and this is one of my pet peeves, and I'm not trying to take it out on you, but I get this every single day of my life is I have this vibration. I need an alignment.
Oh, I know.
Those are absolutely unequivocally unrelated. Under no circumstances. You have a tire balance issue, you have a bent wheel, you've got a hub issue, hub centering, something like that. Has absolutely nothing to do with an alignment.
And that's where we have to be on our toes because we have to redirect them to give me the symptoms, don't give me your diagnosis.
Right.
But the diagnosis came from her father in Kentucky who's been working on cars long before you were a memory in your mother's eyes.
That's okay.
And all that other stuff.
Right.
So those are the kinds of issues that we have to, but I agree with all of these guys. We don't want to have that conversation with a customer. Just tell us what you want us to fix, and we'll do that real well. But to align it, and now alignments, we do four wheel alignments.
Yeah.
We have lots of symptoms for four wheel alignments: tire wear, dog tracking, and a lot of other things. But it's not something that's going to. It has to be. You do a four wheel alignment to fix something, not to make your car feel better and not to drain your wallet.
Yeah, my tires are fine. I mean, they're. I don't see any uneven wear.
He threw a weight or something. Yeah. He probably just got slight out of balance.
Yeah, I let's just go after the wiggle. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's it. Just go after the wiggle. Now, here's what you can do to help your shop. When I drive at 46 miles an hour to 50, I feel the wiggle in the steering wheel, and the steering wheel goes left and right slightly. Gosh, if you come in. And you say something like that, I want to hop over the counter and hug you because nobody does that. They just save themselves a lot of money, and they put me on the right track. But when you send your wife in there and tell us to do a four-wheel alignment, and then you call us up and you're mad because you didn't fix it, then the question is we weren't fixing anything. Your wife told us to do this. So in your case, it's really that. If you can demonstrate that, answer this question, guys. How much in diagnostics is he going to save if he'll just take a tech and demonstrate it? Dollars.
It's easy to, you know, save half hour to an hour. I mean, you're talking $75 to $125.
Exactly. That's exactly my point. Okay. At the minimum, it's $50. If I can send a technician with you, you're going to save at least $50 if you can show him how to do it.
Yeah.
And you know, at the lower speeds, it's fine. It's only over 70 miles an hour, which I know is a bit of a speed limit.
It's a tire balance
issue.
In Texas,
it isn't. So
okay.
It's only over 70 miles an hour.
Okay, Alan says it's a tire balance issue, but here's the deal. If you were to swap, if he wanted to diagnose it himself, swap fronts to back, backs to fronts, and see what happens.
Yeah.
Because if Alan's right, then we just move the problem to the other axle. And if it changes, then you go, yep, Alan got one right for his forever.
Yep, yeah. That's right.
So, anyway, well, good luck to you, Chuck. Thank you very much. That's a good answer. So, when we're going to talk.
Do you need to do your business there? Any business?
Oh, no, I don't have any business there. I already talked Blackwell. Do I have to talk nice about Blackwell? I don't really want to. 40th Street and Greenway, he's a good guy. He's a little harsh around the edges. He calls people's wives names and stuff like that.
He must have known you for a long time.
And he is a mirror image of me. But we talked about automatic transmission exchange. The only one we haven't really talked about is Harker's, and that name did come up. But Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue and Indian School had been around a long time, and I tell the story time and time again, and this was just the wizard. The car came in and had a huge estimate of $1,700, I think, to fix an evaporator. What the heck was it? Oh, a heater core in a BMW, and it was blowing water through the vents. And so they were up against a $1,700 estimate. And as all we know, the tray in the evaporator case, the drain was plugged.
Yeah.
And so they determined that, and so they stuck something up in the drain, dislodged it. Then they won't admit this, but I'm pretty sure they got some electric-powered blowers and hooked them to the vents, and then they blew all that crap out the vent hole, and the car was fixed, and it was like a $100 repair.
Yeah.
So it was. That's the kind of guys, and just like you guys at Kurtz and just like Harker's, all the shops are good guys when they do stuff like that.
Yep.
So Harker's is a good guy. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back in just a minute. Well, let's push all the buttons and make sure that we're all clear. Mark Salem sitting here with Alan, my son, and we've got Kurt, and we've got Eric from Kurt's Automotive, I-17 and Bell.
You know, sometimes I'm wondering if you're really losing it or if you're just messing around.
No, I'm really losing it. I can tell you that right now. You can ask my wife. and when she hears that I called some lady a name, then she's really going to have an opinion on that. But anyway, it was all in fun, and I think I made it up.
Yeah.
And I hope she took it with the – I mean, I didn't really mean it or anything. You know what I mean? Okay, so from our industry point of view, we have – we're going to go back. You had a subject matter at one of the breaks that we were going to talk about, and I don't remember what it was.
No, it was just the you talk about the owner's manual and stuff like this, and even the dealers like to manipulate, and there's a lot of interpretation on the owner's manual. We ran into an issue a while back with a 6.4 Ford, and it had popped the rockers off that passenger side where they all do it.
Yep.
And he was trying to get the dealership to cover. I don't remember what happened. And I ended up getting into an argument with them. And they said these engines need to be the engine oil needs to be changed every 5,000 miles. And I said, really? Show me in the owner's manual. And he says, see right here. See 7,500 or unless you're in extreme conditions. And I said, oh, okay. That's interesting. I said, so Arizona's in extreme condition. I can understand that. What other states are in or what other areas are in extreme? Oh, the entire United States.
Okay.
Entire United States.
That is an argument that happens all the time,
yeah.
as all of us know that.
Yeah.
It's everybody has their own tilt to it, and we're going to blame things on it.
Mm-hmm.
That is every day of our lives.
Yeah.
At least once a week, twice a week, three times a week, we have to deal with those kinds of issues to describe extreme, excessive hot, excessive cold, the oil, the brand of oil. You have to use our oil, not mm-hmm. everybody else's oil. All that kind of stuff. You have all of those moving parts. That makes it really difficult. And especially if you're arguing against somebody that the customer has faith in their ability, which is my nephew out of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And he's talking to me for the very first time, or grandpa's talking to me at the very first time. And so now I'm going, I don't think this is a battle I'm going to win.
Yeah.
I'm going to win. So, and then as our hair gets less and less and gets thinner and grayer, you learn to say, I would think that if you want to use your grandson's maintenance regime, then go ahead and do that. Just have him dictate what it is that you need to have done and keep track of it.
Yeah.
Because nobody really wants that responsibility to work off of his schedule when it could cause problems that would reflect poorly on me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it works. It's a difficult thing.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get past that?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that. Anyway, did you have anything else?
Well, going back, let's go back to the beginning of the show.
Okay.
We were talking about maintenance intervals, how you follow, different things like that. There's none of us here that won't say that this oil will last 10 to 15,000 miles on your semi-blends or your full synthetics. We've done oil tests at 7,500 miles on our blends that we as our standard oil change, and they all come back good. The problem we have is we don't want to see that car once a year because we don't know whether you developed a problem in that year and you've run that thing low on coolant now, you're running it low on oil, you're running diluted oil, things like that. So we like to see them on a regular, about every 5,000. Some people that want to run a little longer, we know that we've given them capable oil that if they happen to push it a little bit, but it's best in the customer just to make sure that, and there's a lot of customers who will come in, we'll look things over, and they'll leave and not do hardly anything because there's nothing wrong. We're not trying to sell them something, but it's in their best interest to see us at least twice a year.
And I like how you put that, and I couldn't agree with you more. This long, I don't have to see your car for a year, bothers me as well, because there's so many things. So let me ask all of you, how long will it take you to give that car in minutes or seconds or hours? How long will it take you to walk around that car and check stuff in order to kind of say to the customer, I see nothing that needs work, or I see something that needs work? How long is that inspection going to take?
About 15 minutes.
15 to a half hour, depending upon the size of it.
And depending on where you're going to go with it, if
right.
it's going to have
yeah.
to be racked. But basically, let me do my best to encompass what. At 3,000 miles, we used to check all the belts, the hoses, the fluids, the tires, the brakes, all that stuff.
Right.
Then we went from 3,000 to 5,000 to 7,500. Now we're up to 10,000, then 12,000, and 15,000.
Yeah.
We'd like to see you in the middle because lots of bad things can happen. We can have coolant in the engine oil. We can find all kinds of problems that are running off the fan belts. All of a sudden, we've got this idler pulley that's we wanted it at 90 degree,
and it's at 75. Yeah.
How often,
they won't make noise.
And they won't make noice.
How often do you guys, how often does the phrase, did you know your water pump's leaking? I mean, come out of your mouth. I mean, they don't know.
They don't know.
Yeah, you know, they're driving when it's under pressure, it's blowing backward. They get home, they don't pay attention, or it evaporates, or whatever they do. You know, the easiest thing to do is if you want to get in between an oil change, just call and say you want a trip check.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going on a trip.
That's it.
Yeah.
A trip check. We're going to check all the tires and, you know, do all that. Just say, I'm not ready for my oil change, I just want a trip check. Whether you're going on a trip or not is unimportant. Just call it a trip check.
I like that. I like that, and I'll tell you why. Because a trip check is we're looking into we're doing the best we can to look into the future. How long is your trip? I'm going to be gone for 3 days. Okay, well, I'm looking for stuff that's going to happen in the next 3 days or in the next
yeah,
couple hundred
miles.
Yeah, and
they're going to Cal across the Mojave Desert at 118. So we're going to look at the cooling system.
Yep.
Bingo. So it's what else could we call it other than a trip check? Although I like that.
Yeah. I mean, again, it doesn't matter to us if you're going on
that's,
a trip.
That's
or not.
What we do a lot of those on the worksheets we get. The customers ask for a pre-trip inspection.
Okay.
And we've just coined that phrase for our customers that they just want a general look over. They want to make sure it's all good for the next 6 months or, you know, 3 months or whatever, just to run through the hot time of the year.
We could call it a go, no go inspection. I mean, I understand we could put lots of words to it, but I think the idea, and I agree with it 100%, we're not seeing our customers as often as we should. And certainly some in our industry are going to take advantage of this trip inspection to sell the heck out of them.
Yeah.
What we're more interested in is looking, and no one has better eyes than we have. No one has more experience than we have. We're going to open the hood, check the fluids, look at the belts and hoses, look at the tires, walk around the car, maybe take it for a quick spin, hand the keys back and say, I don't see anything that you couldn't take my kids to Disneyland.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So maybe that's something that let's work on coming up with a name for that where we could kind of just coin that phrase with respect to what is it exactly do we want them to say to us when they come in, or they'll call and say, hey, can I wait for this? And the answer is going to be yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
It's not Monday mornings or Friday afternoons for obvious reasons, but yeah, it's something we could wait for.
Yeah.
People don't understand that we don't like, you know, as much as they don't want to break down going to California, we don't want to get that phone call Monday morning and say I'm stuck in Blythe, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we don't, especially, you know, any customer, but a good customer, I mean, that doesn't make anyone feel good.
And in reality, all of us here, how many miles are you going between oil changes on the primary vehicle you drive?
7,500.
Alan?
8,000 on the Ford.
About 7.
Okay, I'm at 12 on my Dodge.
Yeah.
Well, on my Dodge, I go 12 or 15.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm at 12,000 miles on the Dodge, but I'm still popping the hood when I get to check the gas, and I'm still looking at the tailgate to see if it's covered with oil.
Yeah.
I'm still doing all that kind of stuff, so it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
So, all right, we got a caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Chris.
Chris, good morning.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Basically, a lot of people nowadays don't even know how to check oil. You know, I make too much money, I take it in. And it's kind of silly. And I always tell them, look for something on the ground. If you got a light on, take it in and get checked. But my question is, watching NASCAR at Talladega, and you know when two guys get in line, it pushes the front guy?
Uh-huh.
If you get three or four guys in line, does that push the guy even faster or not really? That was basically a NASCAR question.
Are we talking about passing gas here, or what are we talking about?
Drafting.
Okay, we can answer that. All right, Brain Trust. I
don't know the answer to that. I don't know if it accentuates it or if it accentuates the drafting or if it makes it worse. I don't know the answer to that based on the number.
We're going to open up a can of worms that we're going to be sorry for. But is that when I worked for NASCAR, evidently the air goes over the top of the car and then it creates a vacuum behind it.
Right.
Okay. So if you put three or four cars in there, then you have three or four of the vacuum cleaners that are running.
Right.
So the push on the very back of the chain is bigger the more cars that are in the chain.
I can tell you I like following semis.
Oh yes.
When I pull them,
well, you know,
it really makes a big difference.
No, because at that point you're only creating a vacuum on the very back. So you're that would not.
One is sucking two behind it.
But it's not two. Because it's not creating a vacuum because it's not going down behind the car because the cars are so close. So it's just going. So there's only vacuum in the back. So it's got to be just this. It's got to be two cars.
Okay.
I'm putting my foot down. Okay. It's got to be just two.
Okay. All right. It's Alan at SalemBoysAuto.com.
I know.
Alan at SalemBoysAuto.com. If you want to square him away, I don't have an
I can tell you when you get wind buffeting and things like that, if you're pulling especially trailers and things like that, get right behind a semi. You're not going to be going too fast. They run good speeds. And it's way smoother to drive behind a semi.
I know, but they're sucking you along.
I know.
Because you can actually tuck in behind them if they'll let you. Uh-huh. If they start flashing their lights, they're telling you, get off my car.
You're a little too close.
And they can't see you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know the answer to that. I don't. Yeah. Chris, thanks for ruining the whole show by asking us a question that we don't even know the answer to. And so we're all going to pass and we're going to punt and we're going to say, I don't know. I can tell you that, like you, I like to pull in behind the fast big trucks and stay close enough to where if the rock comes off, it hits the grill and not my windshield.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's something to it. Fuel economy is a little bit better when you're being.
And it's a lot smoother, a lot less wind buffeting.
Yeah. Okay. Well, at the end of the day, we've gotten as much trouble as we possibly can get into trouble. The issue, I think, at the end of the day, what I'd like to do is those of you out there that do business with guys like us that fix cars, I would say that if you're going 10,000 to 15,000 miles between oil changes, I think it's in your best interest to call and ask us to just give you a visual checkover of the car while you wait on some Wednesday afternoon at 2 o'clock or something like that.
2 minutes.
Let us look at your fluids, your belts, your hoses, your fluids, your tires. Let us look for and tell us if, especially vibrations and pulls, it goes left, it goes right, it vibrates the seat of my pants, it vibrates the whole car, it vibrates the steering wheel. Those are the kinds of discussions we can have. Mm-hmm. Now, if that were the parameters, what would your charge be?
It depends on the situation. It could go anywhere from nothing on a really good customer and it didn't sideline a tech very long to maybe $25 or something.
I agree. Thank you for that. That's what you're absolutely right. If it's an old time customer, and we've got customers, we're into 22,000, 23,000. We've got Mrs.
We're like 38,000.
We've got customers that are three digit and two digit customers. So I mean, they can have whatever they want.
They get what they want.
Yeah, but you're right. It's just really a matter of bringing it in and just sitting down and let us look it over, and we're going to say pass or fail.
Yeah.
And here's why.
Yeah.
And, 1 minute.
And under the best of conditions, you'll have enough faith in your shop to know that they're not going to take that as a reoccurring sales opportunity.
Right.
So we're going to get everybody to come in.
And under best of conditions, don't come in the day before you have to leave for vacation.
Because, that's a good point.
You know what I mean? Because if we have to do a water pump or something like that, it could give us a week, you know.
Yeah, give us some time if you're going to be taken off and stuff like that. And that's typically where it is. Okay, well, if you want to complain to the management of the station, then the four guys that were here on the radio today is
Jim
Rock from Kurtz Automotive. Eric, what's his last name?
Newton.
Eric Newton from Kurtz Automotive. Alan Salem and the guest host, and I forgot what his name was. But anyway, next Saturday we'll be here talking about cars. You're welcome to join us. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. Wear your seatbelt, drive safe, and say thank you to somebody who does something nice.